reported, why, I don't think that people would object to, but that's the way I saw it and the way I believed it. And so, if I should happen to think of something that I'm saying or getting ready to say that I don't think would be published, why, I'll hold up my hand.
Yeah, just do it and I'll put a mark on.
This all started back when I was became old enough to go to school. Mm-hmm. And I was sent to the grade school in San Antonio, then got my deal. And as a child and on up through high school, I was close friends to the sons and the daughters of many of the officers at Fort Sam Houston. In my graduating class, there were several students who were daughters and sons of the officers, as well as enlisted men at Fort Sam Houston.
What school did you graduate from?
Old Main Avenue High School. I graduated there on February 15. Instead of my 32 credits, I spent only two and a half years in high school. But I attended what's called Teachers Normal two summers. Graduated there with 38 credits instead of the 32 in 2.5 years. Now, being closely associated as a child and a teenager, I was in the homes of many of the enlisted, not only the enlisted personnel, but of the officers at Fort Sam Houston. Mm-hmm. And among them, I had some very, very close and personal friends. And after I graduated, I went to work for the depot quartermaster at Fort Sam Houston as a storekeeper. That was right after I graduated, and well, it was a lot of part of February, I guess.
This was as a civilian. You had not joined the Army?
No, I hadn't joined the
Army.
I got into that later.
Okay.
And in that position with the government, I came in contact with a number of old Army men. Among them was a retired Sergeant Major in the 7th Cavalry, V.T. Mulhern. One of the finest men, one of the most honest men I ever saw in my life. He retired, well, he was the first enlistee to be retired with a certificate of merit in the service. He had served all in the Philippines, all over the United States. I forget just the exact number now. There's 200, 300, maybe more engagements that he had in the Philippines and with the Indians. He enlisted when he was 15 years old and lied about it. He said he was 16. And he was all over the West, as well as the Philippines, over in Cuba. And I got a whole lot of stuff from, everybody called him Colonel Mulhern. He wasn't a colonel, he was a retired sergeant major. That builds up now to a certain point. I want to go back a few years now. In 1912, Teddy Roosevelt came to San Antonio, gave a big speech on Alamo Plaza one night, and when he got up to talk, he had just returned from Europe and he'd reviewed the German army and the English army and the French army. He'd spent quite some time over there. must have been, 10,000 people probably on Alamo Plaza that night. And when he got up and started to talk, he said, "I want to tell you, I want to introduce you two men who are natives of San Antonio, living here now." And said, "One of them is the only man that has ever stood up to me face to face and told me to go to hell. The other one looked like he wanted to, but he didn't. Now, the first man's name is B.T. Mulhern, Bartholomew Tamus Mulhern, from the 7th Cavalry. The other one was named Frank Moody. He retired as a sergeant. That ended that, but wait a minute, it didn't end that either. He told them that night, he says, the United States is in a hell of a mess. That's the word he used. He said, we're going to have a war, it's coming, and we are not prepared for it. And it'll take us, my friends, 10 years to get prepared for it, if we don't begin to do something now. At that time, and a few years afterwards, why, they cut out voluntary enlistments, and the only people that would take in the army were these boys that are in the services, were these boys who had violated the law, and the judge would, well, if you would join the services, I won't send you to jail. Now, Roosevelt's remarks about B.T. Mulhern just bored into my head and stayed with me for years. I had never met Mulhern up to that time, but when I got into the quartermaster, that was Mulhern, who was the principal storekeeper. And we became very close friends. Now to tie that in with Roosevelt and history, this history we got written today, there's so much of it, a bunch of hooey. You know what I mean. I could call it something else, but tell me on the record, I want you. The history tells us that Teddy Roosevelt and his Rough Riders won the Battle of San Juan Hill. By Roosevelt's admission, and the story I get from Frank Moody and B.T. Mulhern, certainly agrees with the statement that Roosevelt made. And to me, it just wipes out a whole lot of the history that I learned about the Battle of San Juan Hill. The charge was led by the Rough Riders and the 7th Cavalry. The Rough Riders and the cavalry, the Rough Riders in full retreat, and the cavalry, the 7th Cavalry, was trying to make up their minds. Mulhern at that time was color bearer. On one side of him he had a trumpeter, and on the other side he had a bugler, a drummer. And the drummer had been killed, shot down, and Frank Moody's trumpet was shot out of his hand. So Moody didn't do a thing but step around the colors and pick up the drum and continued up the hill. Roosevelt came by, spotted him, screamed out to him to throw that damn drum away and get a gun and go to fighting. Mulhern, darn old Irishman that he was, looked up at him and said, "Will you go to hell?" Told me that. And Frank Frank Moody told me that. Frank didn't hear Mulhern when he told me the story. In fact, Mulhern was out of town the day that Frank told me about it. Now that kind of makes you wonder who won the battle. That's when the 24th was thrown into it. Now who got the credit for it? Teddy Roosevelt? According to a lot of history I read. Now getting down to the 24th, I knew practically nothing about them other than had those set to with Frank and Colonel Mulhern. My father was a railroad conductor. And one evening, about 5 o'clock, he got a call. I happened to be at home that evening. It was a special troop train going to Houston. And he would be met by the major in charge. And it was, could be a pretty serious thing. Told him to stay on his P's and Q's. Well, that kind of excited me. I wanted to know what kind of thing my dad was going to get into. As a rule, he was a very quiet man. He handled all of his problems with a smile. He was known all over the United States for things that he'd done for people, particularly after he got into the passenger service. And he went down to East Yard, Southern Pacific Yard. A train on the sidetrack. I think about 8 passenger cars, 2 baggage cars, and a caboose. When he walked up to list the numbers of his train, check his train and his train book, he met the major. The major went along with him, and I followed. Major told him, Conductor Foltz, you'll have an escort if it's necessary for you to go through this train. And I'll escort you down as long as you're outside. And asked him, Major, why an escort? He said, well, we have some pretty tough men in this organization. Some of them have no respect for anyone. So if I permit you to go through that train by yourself as a conductor, you could very easily be insulted. So please. So I'll ride in the caboose if it's convenient, and if it's necessary, we can go through. That made an impression on me. What the heck's my dad getting into? Well, about halfway to Houston, the brakeman riding up in the cupola of the caboose noticed smoke coming from one of the baggage cars. Now, this doesn't have anything to do with the subject in question, but one baggage car was in where they had the cooking stuff, and the other one was for their storage space for equipment. They had a field stove in there, some sand spread on the floor to insulate it, and they'd take this cordwood and stick it in that field stove. And it got down about halfway to Houston, and feeding this fire with this cordwood, they had exposed the wood floor to the car. And and it caught fire. That was all the trouble Dad had going into Houston with these boys from the Mexican border. Going back a little bit, why were they sent to the Mexican border? When they came back, they sent a bunch of them down to Brownsville. I don't know how many troops or what they were. I've been told that was part of the 24th. I've been told that it wasn't. My information was that I believe it was part of the 24th. They had a lot of trouble with them down there. There was very little respect shown to the natives. They did a lot of shooting. And finally they moved the whole bunch out in New Mexico and Arizona along that Mexican border, in those little isolated border posts. Well, if they were the 24th, if they went in and saved the troops at San Juan Hill, maybe they should have had some recognition. But they isolated them. All their officers were white men in those days. Well, World War II came along. World War I, rather. According to the prophecies, a statement of Teddy Roosevelt. And they established a big cantonment camp at Houston. Contingent was ready for overseas. They moved those boys out. They brought these boys from the 24th up to Houston. They acted as a cadre to take care of the cantonment camp until such time as the government made up their mind to establish another camp there. Well, those colored boys got into Houston. That was something they hadn't seen for years, long time, and they went wild. Maybe they resented the treatment they'd had, I don't know. And one thing led to the other. They'd get in, have a big fight, jump on a bunch of civilians. Feeling was pretty bad between the police, Sheriff's Department, and the city of Houston as a whole. The climax was a very big riot in Houston. I got this from the deputy sheriff who made the arrest, or attempted to make the arrest. There was a trooper that attacked a woman, raped her, then killed her. When this deputy sheriff attempted to make the arrest, well, the nigger ran and crawled underneath the house. The sheriff ordered him out and he said, if you want me out, you'll have to come and get me. The result was the deputy sheriff shot him. Then it went wild. Sent in MPs. They couldn't do very much, but they finally herded them up and they got most of them back into Camp Logan. There they armed themselves. After the riot and they began to investigate it, they found great quantities of ammunition, rifle shells and such as that, hid among their personal effects. After they armed themselves, they started back into Houston. They were going to clean up Houston, evidently, or try to. They came up on the main road leading into Houston, they saw a house with a light in it, they fired in it. I had worked with 2 years after the war, and after I got out of school and came back to Houston then. Worked with two men who lived on this street and whose house had been shot into. So I took that story and what was given in the newspapers to substantiate that act on the part of these colored boys. They were eventually rounded up and the riot quelled. With the police department, the sheriff's department, a number of state rangers in them. Sent back, or went back on their own, some of them. Went back to Camp Logan. Then the trials began at Fort Sam Houston. At that time I was in the service, base hospital at Fort Sam Houston. Working. So my dad on his level of days, he went up several times to this trial. But there wasn't very much information I could get as to what went on in the trial. There was practically nothing in the newspapers that wasn't sensational. I don't know how much of it was true or what. 13 of those colored boys were given the death sentence. 23 of them were given life sentence at Leavenworth. Been very little about those 23. What happened to them was this. The first official paper signed by President Roosevelt, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, on the instigation of his wife, was a full pardon for those 23 men who had been given a life sentence at Leavenworth. I don't know what happened to them. I don't suppose anybody else did. I'm getting back to the 13. My next contact was at the base hospital at Fort Sam Houston. In high school, I prepared myself for medicine, studied medicine. And I found out that I wouldn't be eligible for it. I'd have to be drafted, either enlist or be drafted. I wasn't eligible for a deferment due to the fact that I was working for the government. My kid brother ran the same thing, birth World War I, World War II, paid the penalty on it. A friend of mine, who was the commanding officer of the base hospital at Fort Sam, knew what I was planning on doing, going to medical school, going to university, and getting my qualification for medical entrance. And he said, well, I said, tell you what, says, I'm scheduled to take a first aid, a field hospital over to France in just a few days. I'll give you a letter to the departmental surgeon asking that you, from the departmental surgeon to the recruiting office, asking that you be assigned to the base hospital detachment. got the letter. My chief clerk then went along. I was principal storekeeper then. Big warehouse is out on Medina Street, along the IGN tracks. My chief clerk, a little bitty fellow that writes some stories. May I do very little bit on the story on this little fellow? He was just tall enough to get in the Army and half a pound underweight. He was a little bachelor. And he said, "Alec, if you go into the service, I'm going with you. And when we get out, we'll both go to the military school together." I said, "Fine." So the night before we went to the recruit station, he spent at my house. The mother fed him, I don't know how many stacks of hotcakes. And on the way out to Camp Travis recruit station, he stopped and bought 2 dozen bananas. He was 1 pound into the clear. He already could get in because he was just the right height. Well, he died before he got a chance to go into the medical school with me. He went out to Fort Sam Houston. They found out that he was a darn good auditor, which he was, so they put him in charge of the canteen, as auditor for the canteen. He asked me what I was qualified for. I said, "Well, nothing in particular." I said, "Come on in the medical corps." "Have I had measles and mumps?" "Yes, both of them." "Named a few other things?" "Yes." So they gave me, put me in charge of a convalescent measles and mumps barracks, one of the old cavalry barracks. 2 weeks later, I had 6 of those cavalry barracks. I had 3 corpsmen in each barracks, 1 trained nurse for all of the barracks, and they were all full, bed to bed. Back now to why I wasn't sent overseas. The day I got to Fort Sam Houston, Permanent Detachment, the base hospital, Colonel Skinner was ordered to Washington, D.C. and put in charge of Walter Reed. He never got across himself. There I was, tied up, personal detachment, Permanent Detachment. About a week, 2 weeks, I was assigned to the Ear, Nose, and Throat Clinic. There I had the privilege of working under 4 of the finest men you ever saw in your life, doctors, MDs, surgeons. They really trained us. They'd make us read. They're going to have a good operation. Why? They'd go and get the books out of the medical library and come over, and we'd sit there at night and discuss this operation so that we knew exactly what we were up against. That was a mighty wonderful training. Appreciated. And that's where I ran into the 13. One evening about 4 o'clock, by knock on the clinic door right after we were supposed to close.
The old time music. And I was talking along, and that music was in the background. The man was so darn homesick that she had to call. You know, we could turn her off for it was at least 30 minutes. We tried to turn her off. No siree, boy. She was going to talk. She was paying for this phone bill. And she was going to enjoy it. So she can't come home right now, so she's going to talk. But she says, "Dad, don't turn the radio on when you talk to me." Had to have a little time out. Mother noticed that neighbors were home over to the north. she's always talking about sweetbreads, they like sweetbreads so well. So we was at the store today, they had some awful nice looking sweetbreads. Her mother, not knowing how to fix them, she buys a package and she says, I'm going to give them to Isabel and let Isabel fix them for me. So she called Isabel, went out the fence, and Isabel said, yeah, I'll fix them for you. Well, not knowing how to fix them, Isabel told her, she said, all you do is dip them in egg and cracker crumbs, egg, cracker crumbs, fry them. Well, gee whiz, anybody can do that. I used to fix a lot of mountain oysters, and that's where we fixed the mountain oysters. And I fried thousands of them. So we'll give her half of them anyway for telling us how to do it. But they look so darn good. So here we go again. Anything new, we try it. Mother just come in the house. She got four zucchinis, one great big one. It, she said it weighed 4 pounds. That's a pretty good size one. The other day, Mother made a roast. We hadn't had a roast in weeks. Oh, it sure did taste good. We had our homegrown potatoes and our cabbage and tomatoes and
carrots.
And we put that in there. And then after it got, oh, just a little before she served it, she cut up some zucchini.
Interrupt you.
Yeah. There was a knock on the clinic door and we closed down exactly at 4. These boys working there when the flu epidemic came on and everything, thousands of them brought in to us. It's a separate story there. They go out and spend hours after the work in the clinic over in the other wards helping out where they could. There were two guards from prison ward, and they had a prisoner between them. He was shackled, his hands were shackled together, and feet were shackled, and there was about a 20-pound cannon ball on the chain that went from his feet up to his hands, and he's holding that in his hands. It's just about as black as ace of spades. I let him into the clinic, and one of the guards said, this man wants to talk to you. I said, all right, what's the trouble? He said, well, said, you know, said, I'm having trouble with my eyes. I said, what is your rank? He said, I'm sergeant. Sergeant, let me examine him. So I sat him down, made the usual examination with the ophthalmoscope and everything. I couldn't find anything wrong with his eyes. Of course, I wasn't an MD or eye man, an oculist. About that time, the major walked in. He said, well, Sergeant, says, what's happened here? Patient brought over from the prison ward and complaining about his eyes hurting him. I haven't been able to get anything from him as to what might be causing it. Or I can't find anything wrong. The major liked to look at the boy, the man's eyes. Major says, sure. So he sat down, did the same thing I did, and couldn't find anything that'd be causing the pain that the old fellow was complaining about. Finally, he asked him, said, Sergeant, says, what do you think's caused this that you have? Have you been reading a whole lot, or you've had strong light in your eyes? He mentioned several things that could probably give him a clue as to what might be there. corps sergeants or some agents. I haven't been doing anything that I know of to cause it, unless maybe the good Lord just punishing me for playing with marked cards. That was my first contact with the 13, living right at Fort Sam Houston, just blocking the post. Quite frequently I'd go home in the evening, spend it with my mother and dad. I got back one night and shortly before midnight, in fact about 11 o'clock, and one of our officers in the clinic said, "Do you want to see some fun tonight?" I said, "What do you mean, see some fun tonight?" I knew that he wasn't officer of the day that day and had no business being there. He said, "I'm on a special detail and I need an aide that you'll have to take along." He said, "You go down to the garage, report to Sergeant so-and-so, gave his name. I'll group you along as an aide." Well, I was kind of curious. The garage, you met an ambulance or some kind of conveyance, trip somewhere. So I went down to the garage. First thing you know, captain that sent me down came up, and other doctors from the hospital, some of them I knew and some different services. All orders in an ambulance. In fact, there were two ambulances that night. He left the base hospital and went down Army Boulevard to Broadway and south on Broadway to the south part of town, circled way around through the east and ended up out M. Travis. And the Army is changing a little bit here. We'll pick up that story later on. Decided that they were going to have to hang these 13 men. The provost marshal at Fort Sam Houston was the fellow that was going to have to do the job. So he went to the commanding officer of the post and told him, he said, "I can't. Christian and a gentleman, I couldn't spring the trap on 13 men, on one man." The old colonel said, "Well, you'll have to be charged with execution. You'll have to execute those men." He said, "Well, I'll resign from the Army before I will take part in the execution of 13 men." That was about 2 days for the execution. There was a major from Louisiana. You look at him, he looked like a bulldog, big jaws, big neck. He heard about it and he went up, commanding officer, said, "I'd take the job." He got the job. Now getting back to these two ambulances. I don't know the major's name. I don't care to know it. Look at him was enough. They circle around and ended up out at Camp Travis. Soon after he got into Camp Travis, captain and the other doctors, they got out. This bulldog, he pulled the trap, executed him. The doctors examined him, pronounced him dead. And thereby ends the story. Over the years, I've wondered why it all had to happen. Those boys isolated. Was their treatment such that it made them responsible for their future actions? Treated like the white soldier was treated. The 13 that they hung were definitely guilty. They were able to identify them. I don't believe there was any question as to whether or not they were guilty of. There were quite a number of people killed down there. The 23, I can't speak for them. I haven't been able to, over the years, make contact to justify all of them. Evidently some evidence was produced which would probably justify the stiff sentence. Why Mrs. Roosevelt insisted that her husband pardon. Now that is all the information I have. Some of it is what I've been told by people who observed it. There when it happened. And people who I know would not prevaricate.
You were in the service at this time?
Yes.
How old were you?
Well, back a long way. I'm almost 80 now. It'll be 80 in November.
But
I went to work for the government in
about 21 then.
I was about 17 when it started. Now, let's go to World War One, huh?
Okay.
When I went to work, the Depot Quartermaster at Fort Sam, the clothing branch. The clothing branch, the hardware department, and the signal corps. Depot were all located in the buildings, in the flanking buildings, of what is now the quadrangle. Departmental offices and engineers' offices all in the buildings facing Grayson Street. We had two big rooms. They were as large as this house, maybe a little larger, on the east side with clothing. The Army had been cut back for their enlistment program. On the insistence of these peace-loving people, these representatives and senators, just like we've got up there today. And with that mega store for equipment, clothing, take care of all the original, all what was left of the original organizations in the Army. The Signal Corps was affected the same way. The hardware that was saddled and such as that, and field kitchens and all. The supply depot is within that quadrangle. And that took care of this entire area around San Antonio there, this part of Texas. Well, so Pancho Villa made his mistake and came up, made that big raid on the Columbus, New Mexico. That wasn't the first raid that had been made. They'd been raiding that Texas border for years. Different bandits out of Mexico. We didn't have enough soldiers to patrol that border. They had reduced the personnel, the enlisted personnel, and the Army, the Navy, the Air Force amount of nothing. Then I think they had one airplane. That was at Camp Travis. A great majority of it, three-fourths or more of that are the Army, was stationed in the Philippine Islands. Panama Canal and Alaska. Less than one-fourth of them were in the United States. They declared a national emergency and inducted all these National Guard units and rushed them to Texas. That was a good brain work on the part of General Leonard Wood, Frederick Funston, Jack Pershing, and others. Probably the Secretary of War and the President. I don't know. Been told by General Pershing that he could have captured Pancho Villa within 24 hours after he entered Mexico, any time after 24 hours after he entered Mexico. Now, why was it necessary if Pershing could have done that to bring all these National Guard units to the Texas border from all over the United States? Men were, many of them not sufficiently trained. I'll give you a good example of it in a few seconds. Unless it was to train those boys. They came down here, many of them ill-fitted in clothes. About the only thing they had was what they had on the backs. We didn't have enough clothing and equipment. San Antonio is the base for this core area here. To take care of those people. And it took them several months to get the equipment, clothing and such as that down here. I was sent out along the INGN tracks to make survey to find warehousing facilities that we could move into. The clothing branch, I found three big warehouses that were available. And to ship stuff in here by the train load 30 days, three warehouses were full. The boys then began to get clothing that they needed and other equipment. With all the National Guard brought in, from 1/4 of our actual military capability, we soon went up pretty high. Those boys were put through all kinds of training down on that Mexican border, both in Texas, Arizona, New Mexico, and sometimes into Mexico itself. Now let's go back to Teddy Roosevelt on Alamo Plaza. Loving his statement. There's going to be a war. We are unprepared for it. And it's going to take us 10 years to prepare for it. Few of those old generals that got busy and convinced the chief of staff that we've got to do something, and brought all those National Guard units down to the Mexican border. The newspapers led the citizens of this country, these jackasses, pardon my these guys watching the Senate and representatives open their eyes a little bit. They just knew that we had a big invasion going on down to Mexico. Mexico was taking us over there. Banditos. Where would we have been? Told about it in 1902. These men that were sent to Washington to look out for us, they didn't give a darn. And we have the same thing coming up today. You mentioned preparing, keeping our services up, where it'd be effective. What happens? Doesn't do the president any good to suggest to them. If the bill does get through and present it to them, well, they'll override it. So what do you do? About myself now, but I got some grandboys coming on that I think a whole lot of, and a lot of granddads and papas today that have the same question. They worry about it, but these birds we elect and sent up there to Washington, but if those generals I mentioned, there are a few others, and the President of the United States, and the Secretary of War, hadn't taken the bull by the horns, held the truth away from the people. About other things in the rod. But
not really, because that's all part of the era, part of the period.
That's based on my personal contact. I've gotten the names of many of them over the years.
Did you stay in San Antonio?
We moved
the
up
whole
here.
Time, or?
We moved up here about 3 years ago, a little better than 3 years ago.
Do you remember anything about the other two trials? The one that they hung the 13 was at the end of the first trial. They had two more trials there.
I don't know anything
in
about the second trial. The only trial that I know of was the 13 and then the 23. I don't know.
Yeah, in 1918, the next year, they had two more trials.
They had two more trials.
Of the boys there at Fort Van. Growing up in San Antonio, back about the time that Teddy Roosevelt was there, or just before, they had some of the black soldiers, the 24th and 25th, at Fort Sam for a while then because of some border problems. And they were having problems with them on the streetcars in San Antonio. Did you ever have
that? I never associated that with the 24th.
Mm-hmm.
But I do know they had some Negro soldiers, and occasionally you'd have trouble on the streetcars. They'd want to go ahead and there'd be something in the newspaper about it, you know.
Mm-hmm. You never had a chance that you saw any of it yourself?
I never saw any of that. The only thing that scared me was one night I was going with a little girl on the south part of town. We'd attend a party out on Government Hill there and catch the last bus into town. And that would give us the last bus out to where she lived, out off the South Presser Street. And I'd catch that back into town. Then I'd have to walk from there home. One night I figured, well, now I can come right down New Braunfels Avenue and be home just about as quick as I would be if I took that streetcar back to town and then walked out from town. Now, she lived about half a block from New Braunfels Avenue on Highland Hills, and we lived up there on 622 Carson Street. That was after 1 o'clock, and I started down New Braunfels Avenue. Walking pretty fast, pretty late at night. I was pretty fast in those days, a pretty good athlete. Came conscious of three men laying down on the side of the road there, New Braunfels Avenue. Who's here? The other said, well, it's about time we were ready to go. They got up and started north on New Braunfels Avenue, right behind me. So I said, Alec, there's three of them. You've heard about these things. I keep messing with that.
Doesn't hurt us.
You've heard about the guys on the streetcar around town, particularly on the west side. Well, I'd put a little steam in my leg. Those cockeyed niggers would put a little steam in their leg. It's that big viaduct over East Yard down near Braunfels Avenue. Well, that's about all I could do to pull up. Fast jog too about that time. I figured, well, this is it. So I backed in between those two telephone poles. One of the old colored boys hell of a race, didn't we? You betcha. That was the only time that I ever had anything to do with them. I don't know whether they're doing that just for the fun or whether they're trying to catch me or what it was. He's a young fellow, we had a hell of a race.